preface it by saying he's getting it from Mike Tomlin. Mm-hmm. Mike Tomlin is telling him he's spinning this yarn for Glazer, and he is giving Glazer permission to then tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
Glazer is just a conduit here. What you're about to hear from Jay Glazer on the Aiyuk thing is not so much Jay Glazer telling us about it as it is Mike Tomlin giving us the inside story.
Just think of Jay as a vessel.
Spilling tea on it. Donnie, do you use that expression often, spilling tea? You like it?
Oh, I have become accustomed to that. Yeah, Sarah is all about spilling tea.
I've got, hold on, before we do anything
especially
else.
Especially with her reality TV.
I've got a Dino Tomlin grade.
Okay, so what's good on, a good grade in the 90s is great.
Great.
Right?
Aaron Donald, low to mid 90s.
TJ Watt is in the 90s.
90s, 95.
If you're in the 40s or 50s, you blow. Where is he?
Dino Tomlin, offensive grade, 56.7.
That's like Van Jefferson territory.
Pretty good, like better blocking grade, 60.3. But Dino, not a big data sample for him. But Dino, for those who have been clamoring, for the Dino Tomlin PFF grade, 56.7.
So this is Glazer on. But back to spilling tea for a second. So what does that? So I know what that expression means, but how did that become in vogue? What, like, I don't even understand how.
Well, there's the Kermit sipping tea meme. Do you think it has something to do with that?
But spilling. How did spilling tea become the 2024 euphemism for? You're going to tell me all your secrets. You're going to give me, you're going to bury your soul to me.
You're asking about the origins of the idiom or the turn of phrase.
The idiomatic expression, spilling tea. I don't get it.
So, again, I'm on like some website that just claims to, you know, the first thing that comes up.
Is it Urban Dictionary?
No.
Because you don't want to look up
term,
some of the stuff
the
there.
The origin of the term tea is believed to have roots in African-American vernacular English, so slang term there. One theory is that tea is an acronym for truth or the truth.
So not actual tea that we drink.
Yeah, just so maybe like we
spill
have...
Spill the truth.
So for example, you and I and Donnie have...
But I see
have,
it spelled T-E-A.
No, I know.
Well, people will send an emoji, Donnie, where it's just the steaming glass of tea.
Well, they're saying spill the tea.
It sounds like it
no,
was...
No, Donnie, Chris is saying T is in the letter T.
No, T-E-A, T-E-A.
T-E-A.
It sounds like... You know how you and I and Donnie have like a couple of code names for people in this building? We do. We don't have to say what they are, who the people are, obviously. That's why they're code names.
Like Mayor McCheese?
Sure. President Jack Tunney? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could keep doing this. It sounds like T was a way to skirt saying this is the actual truth. Like, this is the T on this issue. I'm going to spill the T here.
Okay.
And that was somehow supposed to be harder to decipher.
Do you find yourself... Like, does Alex say, I'm going to spill tea here? Do you guys talk that way to each other?
God, no. Like, if she said, honey, you are the greatest husband of all time, and I said, that's right, babe, no cap, she would probably kick me out of the house. That's another one, no cap.
Donnie, do you use
that's
that
cap.
At all?
Probably be like, you're sleeping on the couch, and that's
I only
not
ever
cap.
Use that in a joking way.
No cap.
Like, I'll say that around Tenuta, because obviously that's big in his vernacular.
Ben Tenuta, our social media maven.
Is he even Gen Z, or is he the next generation below
it? Let's see, he's what? He's 22, 23?
When does Gen Z cut off, and we get into whatever the next one is?
Does it go all the way back to Gen A?
Good, or do you go double A? Because presumably there was a Gen A at some point in the past.
Anyways, here is Glazer telling the story of what exactly happened with Aiyuk.
Yeah, what happened was basically they'd cut it off. They made the decision to move on from Aiyuk. They all decided that. And then they were trading him to the Steelers that morning. So they were on the phone, front office with the 49ers, on the phone with the Steelers front office, and they were completing the trade. Well, Aiyuk happened to get to the facility early. And he sat outside Kyle Shanahan's office. He was like, wait for Kyle. So all of a sudden, like, he goes in, he's like, Kyle, I want to talk to you guys. Well, Kyle starts calling upstairs to John Lynch and Brock Marathe, saying, hey, Aiyuk's here, he wants to talk about something. But they're not answering his call because they're on the phone with the Steelers, trying to get this trade done, trying to finalize it. So he keeps calling and calling and calling, but he realized, like, I can't get in touch with these guys. and he knew that they were making this trade for the Steelers. That's when Kyle booked it upstairs and got up there and said, wait, hold on, huh? And I think the phrase was, hey, give us a few minutes, is what they told Omar Khan, the general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, a few minutes turned into 2 hours. It was interesting because there wasn't a deal on the table at that point. By them talking, then the 49ers basically pulled that deal back out that had already been on the table, but they pulled the offer. So they ended up putting the offer back on the table saying, hey, you have until the end of practice. You can either get traded to the Steelers today, or you can take that deal that we had on the table. And Brandon Ayuk said, this is where I want to be.
All right, so I have to believe that because it's from Glazer, that it was really that close to happening. What it does, too, is it dispels the myth or the story that it didn't happen because the 49ers needed the Courtland Sutton trade with the Broncos.
The three-way trade to happen.
Yeah. There's no trade menage a trois, according to Glazer. They were ready to do it. If Brandon Ayuk had gotten stuck in traffic or had overslept that day,
or had just woken up not feeling a certain kind of way,
Brandon Ayuk would be a Steeler. But he took the initiative and showed up at Shanahan's office. And then if Kyle had talked to Ayuk more, or if he had maybe walked or run slower, Ayuk would be a Steeler.
I do think that it's the funniest part of it is it feels like something out of the West Wing or out of a sports movie. Kyle Shanahan, who notoriously was like bitching and complaining about his players not showing up, or like Trent Williams, he's like, I wish I had new news, but I don't have any new news, blah, blah, blah. Suddenly he's in a dead sprint to go up there and stop, wait a minute.
He
we've
must have
talk.
Sensed, he must have heard in that conversation with Ayuk a different Ayuk. A
so
new
wait,
Ayuk.
Now this also from Glazer would suggest that. Because Ayuk's people wanted it to be that a better offer was made. This seems to suggest that the Niners side of it is truer, I guess? Or that's the Steelers' understanding is that there was never a different deal put in front of him, that it was always the same deal they offered.
The Steelers' way of interpreting what happened, yeah. You know, I think it really means this is the last time we'll ever play this.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the Ayuks of our lives.
Yeah, one more time. Thank you, Jay Glazer, for giving us the epilogue.
I'm just distracted right now. Johnny the Barber, somebody tagged him in a tweet saying that we gave him a shout-out and got him Dino Tomlin's PFF grade finally.
Yep.
So I went and clicked on Johnny's profile 4 hours ago. Just received balloons at the barbershop. The delivery man repeatedly insisted they were from Kazakhstan. Thank you, Kazakhstan, or the individual Kazakhstani responsible. Johnny the Barber, apparently, according to these balloons, turning 50 today.
Oh, I knew that was happening.
Johnny the Barber also, who did deliver 12 ears of corn, which I made it last night. Donnie, did you have any?
No, not yet.
Legitimately,
we have it.
Legitimately delicious. Johnny the Barber also took the time when I politely thanked him for the corn. I said, it was great. Thank you. Seriously, this is really good stuff. He sends me this. I'm glad you liked it. By the way, we have an 89-year-old guy here at the barbershop just railing on Pony right now. You've got to have him call in and roast Pony.
I didn't get that text.
The man is almost 90 years old getting his hair cut, and you are top of mind, and he's apparently complaining about you.
That guy can screw off.
You don't want to say that. He might be dead in a couple
years.
Well,
I know this. I could probably kick his ass right now.
Now, I wouldn't get too presumptuous. How's the fitness training going?
I'm going tonight after work.
Yeah?
Because I came in early for our big staff meeting.
Have you ever heard of the idea that when you start like a healthy habit like that, it takes 3 weeks of steadily doing it for it to become habit-forming for you, like your body craves it? Do you feel like your body craves the exercise
now? I do. If I go
now?
More than 2 days, I'm like, damn it. I need to get
really?
Back in there. Uh-huh.
That's it. Now you're getting somewhere, my friend.
Did the Steelers dodge a bullet with Ayuk?
You know
only
what
two
I think.
Catches and 28 yards. He's dropping touchdowns.
You know what I think the answer there is.
Yes.
Don't you and fake John and Robinson now have a bet about this?
I guess. I don't remember. We were yelling at each other. And
he said you guys have a yardage and a catch bet and
yeah,
a TD
probably.
Bet with him and Deontay Johnson. And it sounds like it's going to be like two guys in like one of those sack races where they keep falling over.
Well, I don't know how many touchdowns will be scored in Carolina this year. You can be assured that a lot will be scored in San Francisco.
Yep, I agree, Donnie. I feel great about that bet.
But I don't know about the other
The other stuff, I mean, two and two, and right now I'm going to say
they dodged the bullet. I don't see a $30 million receiver.
Well, you should have listened to me from literally day one.
Well, there's nobody we could have on to give a better scouting report on the team the Steelers will play on Sunday than our next guest. The ban has been lifted. We go all access, and in this case, we really do have all access. Aditi Kinkabwala, NFL on CBS, brought to you by Bet365. She was on the Broncos sideline Sunday in Seattle, and she will be back there this Sunday for the Steelers and Broncos. So empty the notebook for us, Aditi. Give us your observations on the team the Steelers will play this weekend. You were up close and personal.
You know, the Broncos defense was tremendous in the first half. There were two safeties, and there could have been another two. They brought a lot of pressure. Seattle could not run the ball. And it was really, really quite impressive, especially in an environment like that. And then Seattle just came back and ran right at them in the second half. And so the Broncos defense definitely has some things to work on there. Bo Nix was really, in a lot of ways, he looked like a rookie. You know, he threw an interception to Julian Love. I don't know if you guys watched the game yet or not, but he scared down the receiver. And you're just like, ugh, if you just gave a half-second look to the middle of the field and held Love there, it would have been different. But the flip to that is that I was really, really impressed with his demeanor. And in fact, I was telling a member of the Steelers staff that just this morning, that he did not look flustered. He did not get easily frustrated. That noise did not really bother him. He managed the snap count, the huddle, the play calling, all of that really well. There were a couple early drops in the game, and I really feel like if he could have gotten one of those, he might have settled in a little bit better. But Sean Payton made very, very clear that it was the rest of the team that he really needed more from. That when you have a rookie quarterback like that, you need other guys to step up and do more. And he was quite animated on the sideline about that, talking to his offensive line, talking to Adam Trautman, who missed a block. I don't know. Sean Payton is different this year than he was last year. He really, really likes this team. And I think that it's a nice matchup for the Steelers, just because the Steelers like to win ugly and they play great defense, and going on the road is obviously not like going on the road for any other team. I'm sure they'll have lots of fans, and that kind of negates Bo Nix getting his first start at home in some ways, but it's a nice matchup. I don't know if that's what you were looking for or something more specific.
What did you think of Sean Payton having Bo Nix attempt 42 passes in his NFL debut?
I don't think that he's afraid. He really, really, really likes Bo Nix. Really likes Bo Nix. He loved his tape. He loved him at his workout. He told us that 15 throws into his workout, he walked by his GM and he said, done, this is our guy. And, you know, it has to do with his mental makeup. It has to do with his preparation. He's told the story quite a few times that 5 p.m. the night before they were putting him on the board, they gave him a whole bunch of plays. Like, okay, go ahead and study this. By 9 a.m., you could tell that he had stayed up all night studying. He aced everything. It's just, he's a guy his teammates really like too. And that team has been remade in 2 years. You know, even on the defense, linebacker Alex Singleton was telling me how the first OTA practice this year was better than a week 17 practice last year. And it's not just Vance Joseph kind of making his defensive front more of an attacking front. It's also that you just had guys that had done things a long time, a certain way, are just not there anymore. And so there's not the butting of the heads. It's kind of, you know, everybody's bought in to the way that Sean Payton wants to do things, which is quite old school. You know, he's from the Bill Parcells line.
Well, how much of that is the quarterback is no longer the guy that Sean Payton and the GM there were willing to pay, what, $85 million to go away? You said he really likes this year's team. I can't help but think that it's because largely Russell Wilson is no longer the quarterback and Bo Nix is.
I mean, that's definitely a piece of it, right? But Sean Payton also, I'm going to hold some of these things until we get to the game. But I will say this, to be fair, that Sean Payton went out of his way to tell us in our meetings this week, it's not just about the quarterback. It's not just about, I mean, you can look and you can see who's gone from last year's team. There are quite a few key names that were there for a long time that are no longer there. And Sean went out of his way to say, it's not just about one player, but that there is indeed an addition by subtraction, and it has to do with the whole makeup. It's also a very young team. You know, the Broncos are young, and it's another thing that Sean Payton said to us, that part of what keeps you young is being around so many young guys. That's certainly a piece of it. Look, you know, we had the Broncos week two of last year against the Commanders, and
that was the Hail Mary game.
I've said this to you. Yeah, it was. That, I mean, and the Broncos got up early in the first half and then just completely, totally fell apart, collapsed. And I told you guys this multiple times that Sean Payton and Russell Wilson were both unbelievably bullish on each other. Russell Wilson said to us, he breathed life back into me. That's what he said about Sean Payton. And Sean Payton told us he never would have taken the job if he didn't think that Russell still had it. Now, obviously, it was very early in their relationship, and they both had to learn a lot more about each other and what each other expected. And we saw how that devolved as the year went on. But, you know, this is part of – it's funny because my crew and I, we were sitting here and we were talking about, gosh, Sean seems so much lighter and he seems so much happier. And those are things that his players said to me. I mean, Marvin Mims said it. Cortland Sutton said it. Alex Singleton said it. They all talked about the differences that they are seeing in Sean Payton. I mean, Marvin Mims said to me that Payton seems a lot more patient. And when I took that back to Payton, he's like, well, yeah, I'm not so angry. I'm not so irritated. I am more patient. But it's not... I think that any time a coach comes in, so anyway, let me go back to this. So I was saying to my crew, to Spiro and Arch, you know, like, he really does seem like a different guy. And Arch reminded me, yeah, well, remember year two, he loved Russell Wilson. And he was so sure that he was going to be the guy that fixed Russell Wilson. And remember, or not year two, sorry, week two. In week two, Russell Wilson openly told us that, hey, it was one bad year. That's it. And he is, if you're going to climb another mountain, you have to be in the valley. So it is still early, obviously. But, I mean, I like the line. It's true. It's true, right? I mean, Russ said, if you want to climb another mountain, then you have to get off the previous mountain that you're on. It's not like you just jump from one mountaintop to another.
I want to ask you about the devolvement, about, you said it devolved, and how it pertains to this game and Russ's potential or lack thereof when it comes to his participation. Who do you think will be more disappointed if the game doesn't include Russell Wilson? Russell Wilson himself or Sean Payton?
No, I mean, definitely Russ.
Definitely Russ.
But I say, but again, remember, since Russell Wilson has been in Pittsburgh, he has done everything to say and at least publicly illustrate that he is 100% about the team, and that, you know, he's taking this captaincy seriously and he's taking his involvement in the community seriously. So the right answer here is that if you are truly indeed thinking about the team, and if you truly indeed have confidence in yourself, then you think about the long game. And it's not just about, oh, well, this would be really fun to get to stick it to my old team.
But he's a human and not a robot. He has emotions, well, he has feelings and
yes,
all those things.
Of course. The Sean Payton thing, though, it just is a little insight into Sean Payton. He is one of the best. His two central tenets to this young team right now are play fast. And he's told his coaches this exactly. We don't want anything so complicated that they can't play fast. We need to make sure that they are able to play without overthinking anything. But the second thing, and I witnessed this on the sideline over and over, and it wasn't just Sean Payton saying this to Bo Nix. It was also Cortland Sutton and Josh Reynolds saying it to Bo Nix. Move on to the next play. Meaning you don't hold on tight to anything in the past. The past is the past. And the exact words that Sean Payton used with us is, we in this game waste too much time thinking about things that already happened that just don't matter. He's like, yeah, you get the tablet, you look at what happened, you make a correction, but move on. And it's funny, like, I had something happen in my game from my end, from a broadcast standpoint, and I was like, oh, crap.
Oh, I'm terrible at that. Ask Malzi. I'm so bad at that. I'm really like, bad at the moving
you know,
on when there's a technical
gap or something.
Where's
the short-term memory? Where's this?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I mean, what one of my producers said to me was like, what does Sean Payton say? Move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And that was it.
See, my secret to Didi is when something goes wrong, I'm just so base-level miserable that it can't bring me down appreciably. It's actually a superpower of mine.
Hey, Didi, we don't have a lot of... We don't have much time, but I, this is a little bit of an awkward question, but I really feel like I want to ask it to you, which is a weird way to start
a
question.
That's a good setup.
But
well, that's a great setup.
We just heard Jay Glazer say that the Aiyuk trade was minutes away from happening, and if not for Aiyuk getting to the 49ers facility early that morning and Kyle Shanahan running to John Lynch's office and saying, hey, hold on a second here. We think we can get something done with him. He would have been traded to the Steelers. That seems to debunk the idea that San Francisco needed Denver to trade them Cortland Sutton to make that trade. You were just there. You were just around Sutton. Does that track with you? Does that make sense to you? Do you think that do you think that Cortland Sutton needed to go to San Francisco in order to facilitate that trade?
No, I don't think that that's it. But I also would caution you. The fact that Aiyuk went into the building early goes back to what I told you all a month ago. I don't think in his heart he truly ever really wanted to leave.
Yeah.
I think that he really truly wanted to try to make it work where he was.
Aditi, enjoy Denver, and we can't wait to hear
your
stories from the sideline next week.
All right, you guys are the best. Talk to you soon.
Make clogged gutters a thing of the past with Gutter Helmet. Call 888-5-HELMET today. That music means it's 4:30, and it's time for a Donnie Football Debrief brought to you by his friends at Steel Mill Saloon in Mount Washington. Donnie?
The Debrief, September 11, 2024. This came out yesterday, but we were too busy talking about the Rizzler and the Costco guys. The Steelers have a group of their own legends that are among the nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame Class of 25 in the seniors category. Some of the headliners here, LC Greenwood, Andy Russell, Mike Wagner, Norm Johnson, among others.
Norm Johnson. I got to be honest with you.
Very reliable kicker,
though. If you had given me a handful of Steelers and said there's like five guys who played in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that are eligible for this...
Well, Norm didn't play in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, so there's a reason for that, you wouldn't have thought that.
Well, then how the hell is he even eligible for a group like this?
Is there a different Norm Johnson?
No, it's probably the kicker. Football Reference will be our guide, as it always is.
So he started kicking in 82, Malzi.
Oh, okay, you're right. I'm thinking he played for the Steelers, though, in the
90s. Right, I'm saying about his whole career. He was an old man when he kicked for the Steelers. So that's how he's eligible for this, because that was where most of his career took place. I don't know.
He was a good kicker.
But the bar should be so high for a kicker to get in. Greenwood's the obvious. Now that we have Donnie Shell in the Hall of Fame, he's the one from yesteryear where it's like, how many members of the All-70s team are not in the Hall of Fame? He might literally be the only one.
Two-time first-team All-Pro.
He was voted to the team of the 70s, the decade of the 70s, mm-hmm. and he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Six-time Pro Bowler when that actually meant something.
Did you know that Don Shula was the coach of the 70s and not Chuck Knoll?
That seems like an oversight.
Agreed.
Seems like something you wouldn't really want to do.
So there's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 guys on offense from that 70s team. Every single one of them is in the Hall of Fame. There are 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 on defense, and 18 of them are in the Hall of Fame. The only two who are not are Harvey Martin from the Cowboys.
Yep.
And
LC.
And LC. So Super Bowl MVP and LC Greenwood are both not in. That seems like a mistake. But anyways...
You think both of them are victims of there's too many Cowboys in the Hall of Fame, there's too many Steelers? Probably.
But then those guys keep getting in. Drew Pearson finally got in a couple of years ago.
It's always
Donnie Shell got in.
Harvey Martin's been dead over 20 years.
That gets back to our theory.
It's a bummer.
It stinks when these guys get in when they've been long gone.
Yeah. It's just
their family gets solace and gets that moment to acknowledge and appreciate the person's career. But
it's lost. That's why even though he is not long for this world, I don't think I'm being crass to say that Mongo McMichael, who's been afflicted with ALS for years now, even though he is obviously bedridden and everything else, I'm glad he was alive to get inducted. Like, he got to know that was happening. No matter how dire his circumstance was.
Is John Football a big LC Greenwood guy?
Yeah, absolutely. He had a Greenwood jersey.
Really?
Yeah.
10th round pick, back when they had a lot more than 7. 238th pick, so technically he was picked before Brock Purdy.
I would actually say that two of his unsung favorites are on this list, because Andy Russell's right up there with him.
I had an older gentleman come up to me about a month ago and said I needed to use this, quote, pulpit to get Al Oliver and LC Greenwood into the Hall of Fame.
Who has a better case of those two? If you were going to use the pulpit from one of those two persons.
I would say Greenwood. And I like Oliver a lot, but I think Greenwood's the more compelling case.
Al Oliver, a batting title, a career, 303 average. Man, Oliver's got a hell of a run as a hitter.
I know, man. And we're talking about guys that played 50 years ago.
It's awfully tough. It's awfully tough to play baseball for almost 20 years and hit better than 300 for those 20 years. And Oliver's one of those cases where you could probably look at his career pony and add up the number of games that he didn't play out of 162 game seasons.
Yep.
He's at 3,000 hits if he plays even close to that.
Remember when I put Al Oliver on my all underrated team and you guys got mad at me?
No, that wasn't the guy we got mad about.
Then what was the situation?
You put Ron Francis on there.
Yep, that was a terrible pick.
Okay, so if Al Oliver's a borderline Hall of Famer, why no incredulity over him? But Ron Francis apparently had
you guys
in a tizzy.
Because Al Oliver is not considered one of the,
20 greatest hockey players of all time.
Either is Ron Francis.
Yes, he is.
We did a draft of the best hockey players of all time, and Ron Francis did not get picked for that.
I wasn't in on that draft. That was our intern specialty that day.
Well, that is his bread and butter. If you trust anybody to do a good draft on the greatest NHL players of all time, it would be Sonny Gray.
I'm going to say this.
The guy's watching NHL Network and cutting up American Hockey League highlights.
Settle a show debate. Here's a poll going up. Is Ron Francis, fair Donnie, one of the 20 best hockey players of all time? Or should I go 25 to give us a little padding?
No. You're not allowed to change it.
I would say do 20. I still think it'll probably win.